With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is the Armchair Cricket Podcast.
Hello all, welcome to another episode of Armchair Cricket Podcast, a podcast focusing on Test cricket by armchair critics of the game. I'm your host, Ajit. In today's podcast, again, we will sort of finish off these last couple of episodes arc where we are discussing the recently concluded T20 World Cup won by England. To help me unpack the final and the fallout, if it can be such a thing, for the other teams in the tournament, I have a really special guest, Srini, from the Yellow and Blues Cricket Podcast. Hello, Srini. Welcome to Armchair Cricket Podcast.
Hello, Ajit. Good to speak to you and good to be on your podcast.
As I said, I think we have a nice rapport, me and you, when we talk about cricket. And I would like to continue doing this as often as possible, as time permits for the two of us. So, as I said, we can get straight away into the Cricket World Cup finals. So, any surprise at all that England won ahead of Pakistan?
No, no surprise. I mean, I will put it out there in terms of, you know, I didn't watch the finals completely, you know, in bits and parts, more because of the fact I was still depressed by the fact that, you know, India got thumped by England in the semi-finals. Yeah, that did hurt, I think, for a fact.
No, I mean, I won't blame you. And I think many India fans would have felt exactly the same. A bit let down, a bit betrayed, even that, you know, the team always makes the knockouts, right? You'll be there or thereabouts, you'll come to the final, you'll come to the semi-final. I mean, if you look at the last 7 to 8 world tournaments, India have always been there or thereabouts. But then they let themselves down. On one day, something goes wrong, bowlers don't turn up, the total is not enough, the batsmen don't turn up. One thing or the other lets them down and, well, they get knocked out, right? So let's, first of all, just take a quick look at the final end. I mean, look, the way England had beaten India, black and blue, you would imagine they were the favourites going into final. But as always, right, as the saying, the one of the truisms in cricket, a cornered Pakistan is a dangerous Pakistan. A Pakistan on the, let's say, rejuvenation drive is a very, very dangerous one. And you would think this would be a very interesting contest. So right at the top, England got what they wanted. They wanted Pakistan batting first. They achieved that. So they were so confident in chasing any total Pakistan would be able to put up, even against that very competitive fast bowling lineup that Pakistan brings. So I think right at the top, Mohammad Rizwan tried, he couldn't get going. And then Babar Azam, well, he did his customary role, scoring at about 110, 115. But I think the failure of Mohammad Haris may have hurt them quite a lot.
Yeah, that is. The thing to look at this is, like, you know, unlike the semi-finals, this game for England was actually won by the bowlers rather than the batsmen. You know, you mentioned, like, you know, the beginning about India being there and thereabouts in ICC trophies. England have obviously been also been in kind of knockout phases in the last 6-7 years sort of thing. And the whole cricket's probably been built more on their attacking batsmen. And I looked at this particular final as more like, you know, England's batsmen versus Pakistan's bowlers, because I would have said those were the two real strengths in each team. Yes, England had good bowlers, but I think Pakistan had a better bowling attack. So from a batting perspective, England had better batsmen. So I know what you mean by saying, you know, England got Pakistan to bat first. And again, same thing, Mohammad Rizwan and Babar Azam, you would say, like, you know, other than the semi-finals against New Zealand, they really hadn't done that. That's been their Achilles heel throughout this tournament and going back as well. You know, the middle order really didn't get to do much because they wasted, or the middle order had a lot of thing, and Shaan Masood did come and sort of thing. But then, similar to the truism that you said about a cornered Pakistan, it's also true about there is always a collapse in Pakistan, you know, just around the corner. And that came, you know, going from, at one point, where were they, something like 85 for 4 to, like, you know, suddenly in the next 50 runs, that completely, yes, like, you know, collapsed.
You bring up a good point. They were 84 for 2 when Babar Azam was dismissed. And at 11 overs, 84 for 2, with, you know, an in-form Iftikhar, Shadab and Nawaz to come, you would think maybe they could even top 160 or 170. See, the same total that England chased down with ease, right, in the semi-final is a different beast in the final, right? 170 is a very reasonable total. That could very well have happened, but that didn't. Again, here, lot of credit to Rashid. Basically, you know, he dismissed Babar Azam at that point in time. Again, 4 for 22. Adil Rashid was, you know, he was expected to bowl his overs up front in the first half already. And what England really planned and executed well was how they used Adil Rashid's overs throughout the tournament, actually. He appeared to be not much in form, but he looks like a different bowler in the back end of the tournament because, one, he discovered his form and his confidence, but I think he was captained really well, right? He had the right backing on the field. His captain knew what Rashid wants, where he's going to bowl, and what sort of fields were required for what sort of batsman. See, a leg spinner is a tough bowler. The art is tough. And if you are not careful, you leak a lot of runs if you're not captained well. And putting the ball there or thereabouts is anyway going to be a challenge. But even if you were to master it, you need an understanding captain for that. So there, I think a lot of credit to both Butler and maybe Matthew Mott, the coach off the field, right? They got that right. They knew Rashid is going to be their trump card come the back end of the tournament when the pitches are a bit more dry, a bit more tired. Because this pitch was also like, it was also, I think, second or third time it was being used, I read, right? At least it was used once for India-Pakistan game already in the league stages and maybe again later. So the pitch was tired. And there you go. See, when you look at it, even in tactics, I think Pakistan were sort of outthought even before they entered the field. If you look at it, I was surprised to see Chris Wokes keep his place, frankly, in the final. Maybe because he could bat, they kept him. Chris Jordan was introduced only in the second half of the tournament. He did really well. Rashid kept growing. And of course, like, the revelation, that is Sam Curran. I mean, he was rightly the man of the match. First spell, 5 for 1, 2 overs. Second spell, 7 for 2. Two overs. That's crazy good bowling. And basically, the last quarter of their innings was where Pakistan lost the game, right? What you rightly said, that collapse. So to take out, once Shaan Masood and Shadab again put on a partnership of 40 or so, like 121 for 4. Again, they were looking really dangerous that stage. But then from there, they lost in the next 8 runs, or next, let's say in the next 11 runs, they lost all those, you know, 4 wickets, and that was the real problem. So for you, then once the England team came out to chase, what would have been your thoughts if you were the Pakistan management, Pakistan bowling lineup?
I think getting Alex Hales and Jos Buttler out, and it started well in that way, you know, that delivery from Shaheen Shafridi to get Alex Hales, it sort of put the cat among the pigeons, you know, in that way. And it thought, right, here we go, and, like, you know, the bowling attack, and especially, like, you know, Shaheen Shafridi started why, as he came into the tournament, you know, just on the back of an injury, and he wasn't in the greatest of the form in the first. It looked like, you know, over the tournament, he had kind of got into form and he was there. I know, again, he got injured, you know, during the tournament. Babar Azam, etc., said that that was one of the things that did cost him. You know, he didn't, I mean, ultimately, he didn't end up bowling his entire quota of overs. So, who knows, given the fact that the innings actually went up to the 19th over, 138 was never going to be a challenge in total, but you never know if one team who could kind of potentially defend that, you know, with a full in-form Afridi and, you know, not injured, etc., they may well have been pulled it up. But that was probably the one for me in terms of looking like, you know, how would Afridi do? And to be fair to him, like, you know, he did produce that straight away in the very first over, picking off Alex Hales.
That injury to Afridi was the turning point. I mean, they required 41 of 29, right? I mean, he tried to take a catch and got injured. Yeah. So it was not even during his bowling. That was unfortunate. And it looks like he's going to face another long layoff on the sidelines. Poor guy, another 3-4 months. He's young. He's going to be stronger for this. But, I mean, that's very unfortunate if you look at it as a bowler. But in the context of that game, the next 8 or 10 balls really decided the game for England, right? So, 41 of 29. And then the 5 balls that Iftikhar Ahmed bowled, they took 13 runs. Especially Stokes, who were completely, you know, he looked at all at sea. He was scoring at a strike rate of 70 by that stage, right? He suddenly seizes the moment. He hits a 6 and a 4 of Iftikhar Ahmed. And in the very next over, Moeen Ali hits the first 2 balls for 4s of, I think, Mohammad Wasim. That's it. The game was over at that stage. Because, see, this is what I felt, right? By giving themselves a total under 140, England gave themselves a chance of coming back into the contest, even if they were to fall behind.
Yeah.
In a chase of 170, you may never have that opportunity if you fall significantly behind. In this case, even though they were sort of slightly behind, they were able to make that comeback thanks to the total being so low. And of course, you see Ben Stokes, come at the man, we've heard it all. But I think he was very close to imploding, I thought. I mean, he looked really frustrated. He was unable to get the ball away. And maybe he got a bit of a, you know, luck that suddenly Afridi had to go off and Iftikhar had to finish the over.
Yeah, I mean, if you looked at it, like, you know, all of the other Pakistani bowlers, they were, like, you know, sort of under 8. You know, in fact, Naseem Shah was probably the only one who went, like, you know, at an economy rate of 7.5, the rest of them. But Mohammad Wasim and Iftikhar, that was the two weak link, you know, where England really took it on. And even if those two of them, if you look at it, again, as you say, if they had a 170 total, England would have had to go, you know, against Naseem Shah, against Haris Rauf, Shadab Khan. They would have had to go against all of them, you know, Shaheen Shah Afridi as well. I mean, Shaheen Shah Afridi, he, like, the 2 overs that he bowled, he went just for 13. And right. I think in the final, like, sort of 2 overs, 13 is like, you know, if he had bowled the same 2 overs for 30, that just shows you the comparison you just picked up around. He bowled 2 overs for 13 versus Iftikhar Ahmed bowled less than an over for 13, you know, which was basically Shaheen Shah Afridi's one. So that's where, you know, the game turned.
Look, also the other thing, I mean, I thought they were always going to respect Haris Rauf. They gave him 2 wickets. So, look, they had an untried middle order in many ways, right? Phil Salt was new. He didn't get a bat in the semi-final. Harry Brook has not really shown in this tournament. And then Moeen Ali was your hope and Ben Stokes. So, again, it was so crucial Ben Stokes stayed till the end. I think he knew it very well. If Ben Stokes had been dismissed, even by the 15th over, I had a feeling England were going to lose. You know, it would have then fallen on Sam Curran, Wokes, and, you know, Livingston. Livingston is always there, but again, he had not done a whole lot heading into this final, right? So there was a bit of, you know, a chance element there, which Pakistan would have hoped to have exploited had Shaheen Shah bowled his full quota. And, you know, Mohammad Wasim, you would expect he would be targeted in this lineup because Rauf is bowling really well. Naseem Shah, I think, was really unlucky. Haris Rauf finished his spell really well, but Naseem Shah, I think, 4 overs 30. I think he had 15 or 16 dot balls in that 30 runs. It's very unfortunate that he couldn't probably win the game. But, you know, Naseem Shah for me, look, when Hasnain and Naseem Shah burst out onto the scene, I was always more excited about Naseem Shah than Hasnain. Hasnain looks like, for the lack of a better comparison, like Umran Malik. He has the pace, but he still doesn't have the control. But on the other hand, if you look at Naseem Shah, he's a very intelligent bowler. And at 2021, look, between him, Shaheen Shah Afridi, you can imagine these two bowling and opening a test match attack. right? This will be quite something. And Mohammad Wasim, a bit unlucky to go for tap. Shadab Khan, again, you see, they played him out, literally. Haris Rauf, Shadab Khan, the plan was to play them out. I think Phil Salt and like Harry Brooke were given instructions, just play these guys out comfortably. When the time comes, even if the required run rate is 8 or 9 and over in the last 4 overs, we'll make it up. We'll hit the faster bowlers, right? It more or less was according to plan if you're an England player. And I mean, we all talk about that one over, right, where Naseem Shah beat Butler 4 times. Then he had to defend the last ball. And then there were 4 runs for wides and then 1-6, which he scooped. You know, I remember reading somewhere online, would Indian fans have forgiven their air quotes star batsman if he had gone for such a stroke and made a mistake? Sometimes I think a lot of pressure is put on our players by our own fans, because our players are expected to be infallible. Like Butler was going nowhere in a hurry before that shot. He was scoring at runner ball. That stroke made him, you know, get to a decent strike rate, right? Without that, if you can imagine, if he had gotten out on that ball, he would have gotten out with a strike rate of 104 or something. Do you think Indian fans would have been as forgiving? Because I think that fearlessness is what really gives you this England team, and this, it shows you what they're made of. And really, that fearlessness is what won them the trophy, if you ask me.
Yeah, and to answer your question, the answer would be no. I mean, I obviously followed being in England, like, you know, the last 6-7 years, you know, when Owen Morgan took in 2015 and they limped out of that World Cup, you know, and post, then he came in and said, we're going to change, you know, this fearlessness is going to be, you know, I mentioned earlier about England being batting strength, you know, that's the thing he bought in. And there have been some spectacular collapses during, if you looked at England's white ball over the last 7 years, there have been some matches where there have been spectacular collapses because England have gone chasing like that. And his response, you know, on Morgan's was always like, no, it doesn't matter. I don't think, as you say, like, you know, Indian fans would expect our players to be infallible. It's a case of, like, you know, wanting to have our cake and eat too. You know, like, you know, it's never going to happen if a batsman goes, like, you know, 10 games. Chances are, like, 8 times if you succeed, or even 6 times you succeed and 4 times you fail, you should be able to take that. But I think we almost expect, like, you know, you to succeed 10 out of 10 times, maybe 9, but 10 out of 10 times. Even with Surya Kumar Yadav, you know, it was picked like, you know, oh yeah, he did all of those things, but he failed in that semi-final. And you think, well, it is not possible for any batsman, even the great Tendulkar, to have, like, you know, sort of succeeded throughout his entire career. You know, 200 test matches, he didn't succeed 200 test matches. And that's something I don't think our fan, and that's where, you know, going back, you know, sort of, I know we're kind of slightly digressing towards India, but the point about, like, you know, yes, we need to have a mentality change for the Indian play openers, and in terms of, you know, going hell for leather right from the beginning. Because you think about T20 nowadays, and think, you know, I look at it from almost like the DLS concept of where it talks about resources and etc. And you think, well, you've got 10 wickets for 20 overs. You take a ODI match, you've still got 10 wickets for 50 overs versus, you know, you take a test match. The resource availability in terms of the 10 wickets is the same. But then as your risk sort of changes, you know, with 20 overs, you think, you know, we can afford to lose a wicket every 2 overs. And, you know, it's the same thing, you know, but if you do score like 20 runs every 2 overs and afford to lose, then we will end up scoring 200 all out. You will take 200 all out any day versus saying, like, no, oh, no, we need to hold on the wickets, we don't lose them, and get to, like, you know, 130, 140 for 6 or 140 for 7. It's irrelevant kind of thing. And that is the way England bat. You know, they say, like, you know, happily take 200 all out over 140 for 5. And that's the difference, isn't it?
Absolutely. And that fearlessness, you know, they have now set the template of how T20 cricket will be played. You know, let's go to our other discussion point. India, where are the India team going from here? So if you look at the squad from India that played the semi-final, right? KL Rahul, Rohit Sharma, Virat Kohli, Yadav. So I see at least 4 or 5 of these people not play many more T20s for India from here on in. So for me, Rohit Sharma, Virat Kohli, even Shami, up to a point, Bhuvi, Bhuneshwar Kumar, may not play too many games anymore. Pant will play. DK is out of the picture now, I think. DK had his time in the sun once more, but he couldn't make much of it, which is unfortunate. And Ashwin, I think, will still stay in the picture for me. Akshar Patel will stay, even though Jadeja will come back. He'll be something. Arshdeep is the future, you would think. Mohammad Shami might be saved for some key games in ODIs and tests, right? He's also on the other side of 30. And Bhuvneshwar Kumar, I think, may have played his last World Cup, according to me. And I think India got their balance wrong when they did not give Yuzi Chahal even one game in the World Cup. At least in the semifinal, I expected him to have come in Akshar Patel's place, actually. But okay, I would like to hear your thoughts of where this India T20 team is going.
Where this India T20 team is going? I mean, I looked at, you know, the Indian bandwagon moves on, you know, so very quickly at the end of the World Cup. They are already on to New Zealand. On Friday, they play the first T20 in New Zealand. And obviously, the team's been announced there. A lot of players, if you like, you know, the ones that you mentioned, you know, Arashwin, Dinesh Karthik, KL Rahul, even Rohit Sharma, Virat Kohli, five to pick, you know, are not on that tour to New Zealand with Hardik Pandya under captaincy. And that's almost where I would like to see, like, you know, the India team moving, you know, Hardik Pandya, as opposed to, like, you know, Rohit Sharma winning the titles within MI. I think Gujarat Titans win in the IPL under Hardik Pandya's captaincy is so much more in terms of he pulled the team together. Like, they weren't the superstars that MI had with GT. I think I would almost move the captaincy, like, you know, Hardik Pandya started it and carrying on. Given the fact, like, you know, we're not obviously, this is almost the beginning of the cycle for the next 2024 World Cup, and you start to build the team from here. Whether Rohit Sharma retires from T20 or not, I think it's time to move on. You know, in terms of this World Cup, you know, you picked up Yuzi Chahal, and I would have thought, like, you know, India weren't bold enough to, for example, say, yes, they replaced Dinesh Karthik with Rishabh Pant, but I would have probably gone and said, let's play Rishabh Pant as an opener, as a left-hand right-arm combination in place of Rahul. Rahul wasn't, you know, pulling trees through the tournament. You know, again, there's this thing that goes around that, you know, him being a stat padder, etc., and all of those things. And you look at it, like, you know, his last 50s in T20 World Cup has come against the likes of Netherlands, possibly Namibia, UAE, or somebody else. Like, you know, but he's really not got any big scores against what you would class as the stronger, bigger teams, sort of thing. I would have definitely played Pant as an opener, because again, Pant is one of those people where I think right now, as it stands, you know, he's a better test player, an okay one-day player, and an average T20 player. I would say, like, you know, you would think, as modern, looking at the shots he plays in test cricket, you would think he must be a great T20 player. I don't think even he knows what his role is in T20. And that's probably not even defined for most of the players in the Indian team. Rishabh Pant needs to have a defined role, you know, keeping apart from a batting perspective. It's interesting to see, when I looked at the squad, there's actually only one opener in that New Zealand squad that, you know, India picked, which is Shubman Gill.
Right.
I'm surprised Ruturaj Gaikwad isn't there.
I think Ishan Kishan will be the...
Kishan will be the opening. But I just looked at it and thought, how have we gone there with just genuinely one opening? You know, Ishan Kishan, again, you would say is a makeshift opener rather than... It's fine, you know, if that's the role that they're going to give him, and, you know, consistently say, right, you're going to be the opener for the next 2 years until we get into the 2024. If that's what we are... I'm not even sure India or BCCI have thought about this and said, like, no, right, we start... I see that a lot in kind of... in England and or Australia and things like that, where, or definitely for sure in England, where they look at this as cycles to say, like, no, okay, this World Cup's finished, 2024, let's start the cycle again. I don't know whether you want to talk about, you know, sort of India in terms of the ODI. We know the next thing is the World Cup coming in. And I'm looking at this squad thinking, why is even Shikhar Dhawan? He's probably going to be closer to 38 when that World Cup happens in India.
No, I think Shikhar Dhawan is sort of he's a captain that is chosen to lead this team rather than, you know, Shikhar Dhawan, the player opener that is required for this team.
But I just think that's a waste of a spot. You know, just give Rishabh Pant the captaincy in there. You know, he's the vice captain. If that's what you've done, you know, he's the vice captain for if Rohit Sharma isn't going there, And this where it kind of shows to me, like, you know, the lack of planning in the sense of thinking, well, this is not, it's the Ireland tour that India came to before the sort of ODI series in England, the Zimbabwe series that India went to, and this one, it almost seems to be like the, might have been the West Indies as well, the Shikhar Dhawan beneficiary tournaments kind of thing. He just seems to be captaining this with the second string team and going there. And you're thinking,
well, he also wins.
He does win, but the thing is, when it comes to the World Cup, unless you're going to say, like, no, he's going to open for us in the World Cup at home in 2023, you might as well give other people a chance to kind of get used to, like, you know, get 10-15 games under their belt,
right?
Rather than, like, you know, just pulling people in the last minute there.
No, I agree. I at least agree with part of what you say, that, you know, Dhawan is sort of the mature head in that group, right? If you look at the rest of this group, there are a couple of people who are sort of also in their 30s, right? So you have Surya, you have Deepak Chahar, and you have Dhawan, only three people in the 30s. And in terms of match experience, not a lot. So you have Shahbaz Ahmed, who's been chosen to go to New Zealand. You have, so Shardul Thakur, right? All of these people, for me, he's sort of seen as the option that can keep a calm head. Rishabh Pant, I don't think he's ready to captain an India team yet. That's what they're building up to. Maybe in a year or two, he might be ready. I think post-World Cup, he might have more captaincy roles for India. Him and Hardik are the two people I see taking India forward as captaincy material. Maybe KL Rahul in the test matches. But for me, as things stand, I think Shikhar Dhawan has been entrusted with the role of sort of leading the team, imparting his captaincy experience to the people in the squad. So there he benefits, or there he sort of holds on to that role. I think he also knows he may not play the World Cup. He knows he's keeping the seat warm, more or less. Right? When the main people are taking rest, once Rohit Sharma and Virat Kohli and all of these guys come back, he may have to make way for it. I think he recognizes it within his own mind, but you never know, right? If you have a chance is when you can make something count. You cannot make something count when you're on the bench. So at least that's how he thinks of it. But for me, India have never performed well when they've gone to New Zealand. So I'm more curious how this set of people who have gone to New Zealand will perform. And the last tour was an unmitigated disaster when they went to New Zealand, right? So I'm more looking forward to that. Also, Umran Malik is in both the squads.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling he'll get at least one game in each format, if not more, right? I don't think he'll start, but I'm curious if he will, right? So what are your thoughts on the rest of the squad? Washington Sundar is there. Also, Kuldeep Yadav has been brought back into the ODI squad. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, just going back on the sort of captaincy point, you know, before, if I looked at the ODI squad, you know, there's Rishabh Pant, Shreyas Iyer, and Sanju Samson, three IPL captains. You know, surely, like, you know, there is experience. And I look at it and think of this thing, okay, there is none of the ODI series, you know, historically ODI series, some of them were inconsequential. You just think, oh yeah, they're just playing for the sake of it. Now, obviously, there is the World Super League, so you get the points, rankings, they all make a difference. So you think, yeah, it is important, you know. Just on the back of T20 World Cup, it seems irrelevant. Why are we even playing? But I get that, you know, in terms of... So I would have looked at it and said, like, even if India loses this ODI series, is it the end of the world? I think... I just picking on your point about it's always like, you know, we never do well there. It's an unmitigated disaster, the last one. If we lost this, people wouldn't be like, you know, thinking, oh, hang on, why did we lose there? So, but that would have been a good place for, like, you know, whether you pick Rishabh Pant or Shreyas Iyer, for example, you know, as the captain, to, like, you know, for them to learn the ropes and say, this is the team, you know, you may not need it, lead the team before the World Cup, but post the World Cup, you know, suddenly just throwing somebody in after the World Cup, not having given them enough captaincy experience. Rohit Sharma never led any of, you know, India's ODI teams and stuff, T20 teams, really, even when Kohli was not around, etc. And he's been thrown in. And the same thing, you know, it's kind of there.
You have a good point, I think.
In terms of the overall team, yeah. The one I'm looking for is, like, you know, Deepak Chahar. You know, I wish, like, you know, obviously he got injured before the IPL last year, and, you know, lost most of the thing. And when he came back into the Zimbabwe series and played well, I almost was thinking, like, no, maybe he might just get on the plane to Australia, especially when Bumrah got injured. Obviously, right. they went for Shami over Bumrah. So Deepak Chahar is the one that I'm looking at in terms of Umran Malik. Yeah, he's really raw. I think there is still, these tours will help him to shape, you know, to improve. You know, it's just, I think Siraj is a good example to look at, whereby, you know, he started similarly raw, and then, you know, he's kind of that series in England he played last year, he grew into confidence and all of those things. So they are probably the next patch if you look at Shahbaz Ahmad. I'm not so sure, you know, a left armer in, you know, we've seen the likes of Vettori and Santner, etc. Ajaz Patel probably as well, really not playing at all in New Zealand's own left arm spinners, you know, in their ODI and T20. It's not really a ground for someone, even if you can really, it's probably more a ground place for wrist spinners than I would say left arm orthodox.
Oh, they do have a wrist spinner too. They have, you know, they have Kuldeep Yadav. But
yeah,
me,
that's what I'm saying. It's probably more for them rather than kind of, you know, Shahbaz Ahmad. You know, his performance is probably not going, well, I wouldn't look at it and say if he performed poorly to say, yeah, New Zealand, give him a hospital pass. You know, it's not really the one there. Washington Sundar is, yeah, he definitely both from, you know, sort of bat and ball, looking forward to him. Shardul Thakur, don't know, you know, he's, I'm not sure. I know he made a lot of noise before, when the team was picked for the T20 World Cup, that he wasn't picked. But again, I can't see him being with Bumrah back, with Jadeja back, you know, as one of the sort of, and especially with Jadeja back and Hardik Pandya, that's an interesting one. Again, he's not in the ODI squad. He's only playing the T20. You know, Hardik Pandya is not there. And I would have thought Jadeja and Hardik Pandya in India, two all-rounders playing in, would have given us a better balance. What will give us a better balance, you know, going into the ODI World Cup. I don't know what Hardik Pandya's plans are, you know, or what the BCCI's plans are for him in terms of the white ball from an ODI, or is it just going to be a T20? Because he's obviously not there in the test squad at the minute. I know he's just coming back. But I would definitely like to see him and Jadeja play some ODIs before we get into that kind of, you know, World Cup.
They will. Thing. The way I look at it, they are going to play a lot more ODIs and home series as well as away. Look, the next World Cup is going to be held in India. So they're going to get a lot of opportunity to play ODIs in the home conditions, or the conditions that are really required for the World Cup. So I think we have plenty of series upcoming in February, March and so on, after, before the World Cup, before the IPL as well as after. So I think that's not really a worry for me. So before we go any further, do you think Rohit Sharma may have also played his last World Cup in the T20 format?
Yeah. Obviously we are not selectors, but if I was a selector, yes, he's definitely played the last World Cup. Definitely not seeing him going to the US in 2024. I'm trying to remember. I think there might have been kind of a post on Twitter or something from ESPN Crick Info. I'm trying to remember the three players. So they had, like, you know, out of the squad that played, there are only three players who said, these are guaranteed for 2024. Who are the other eight? And I'm thinking I think it was Surya Kumar Yadav, Hardik Pandya, and may have been Rishabh Pant. They, in fact, didn't even have Bumrah on there. Those were the only three there. And, you know, sort of saying who else, you know, even Virat Kohli, for me, may have played his last World Cup.
I have a feeling he'll hang up his boots after the 2023 World Cup as well.
Yeah. He might just focus on the test.
Exactly.
And kind of do the white ball. Rohit Sharma, hopefully, probably he's also hoping to, like, get through that World Cup. Yeah, a win under the belt. Both of them, you know, would be a good one. But from a T20 perspective, I think so.
All right.
Rahul is probably the more interesting one.
Tell me.
Has he played? I mean, you know, I was having this conversation with a friend and saying, like, you know, yeah, he's done for me. But I don't think, you know, it's unfair to say he's done, because he's got age slightly bit on his side, and he still can come back. You know, it's entirely up to him. In terms of Virat Kohli, is a classic example of where over the last 2 years we were saying, you know, most people said it's time to drop Virat Kohli, me included. I said, like, no, I wouldn't have taken him to the, this is pre the Asia Cup. I'm sure we talked about this on your podcast, you know, the last when we had the conversation last time around, that I personally wouldn't have taken him, but obviously he came back in roaring form. So you guess, you say, like, no, if you can give Kohli that long rope, surely Rahul should also get the long rope, and hopefully he will come back in form.
Well, according to many people, he's already at the end of such a long rope. But that's okay. I think those of us who make these sort of comments are also not looking at his performances. He did hit a 50. He did have one more good score in the series. But yeah, I mean, look, it will sort itself out for Rahul, I think. He's becoming more and more assertive. He just has to believe in himself. He has all the strokes. I mean, all of this have been said before. For him, he'll never be a Alex Hales.
Yeah.
We know this, right? He's going to be more like a Butler who's going to take his time at the start, but he's going to make up at the end. But then you need only one of those at the top. So if Rohit Sharma is not there, if Kohli is not there, it makes no sense in also letting KL Rahul go, right?
It depends, whether if, for example, Shubman Gill can transform into that player, whether, again, Ishan Kishan, we talked about it, opening, if he can transfer, T20 is one of those things where, you're almost on a carousel where new players keep coming in, especially every IPL you play, you tend to find there's this new, take Ruthraj Gaikwad as an example, he seemed to have come and gone so quickly. As I said to you, I'm surprised that Ruthraj Gaikwad didn't make either of the squads. I don't know if he's injured, but I was very surprised to see that he didn't make either of the squad to New Zealand.
You're right. I mean, I think there is a lot of discussion about this also out there in the social media world, simply because of such a good form he was in the domestic trophies, domestic tournaments leading up to the selection chances, right? So maybe there is something else we don't see, which is happening behind the scenes. I'm sure within a year or so, he will be a definite part of not only India's plans, but I might dare say he might even be a fixture in the ODI squad for India, right? So let's see how that goes. So now, if you were to take a quick look at some of the news from off the field, right? So we got to see that New Zealand have sort of started making some tough decisions with their squad selections in the same series against India. You see both Guptill and Bolt have been left out. Guptill, I think, did not get a single game in the World Cup. So Finn Allen, with Finn Allen's resurgence, I think they want to give him more chances. Devon Conway has proven to be a really good, solid sort of T20 opener. But for me, no Guptill in the ODI squad was a bit of a surprise, right? Again, Finn Allen is one of the openers, But to see, no Guptill, that gives me a bit of a surprise, because Kane Williamson will not be expected to open, right? If you look at their last ODI squad tournament that New Zealand played against Australia, which they lost, right? It was Finn Allen and Devon Conway who opened in the ODIs as well. So maybe they want to go this way in both the shorter formats. Guptill is more or less, will have to fight his way back, because Darrell Mitchell has proved himself really well. And in ODIs, they have Tom Latham who plays in the middle order. Because there's more time, you have Glenn Phillips anyway there. And Jimmy Neesham who will play the sort of hitting role. So I think Guptill will have to now really come back. Will have to fight back.
Yeah, I think that Guptill was a surprise, but I suppose they're looking at, as you say, give Finn Allen and Devon Conway a run of games, planning towards the World Cup, in terms of getting them both playing together as an option. So that may be the reason why they're looking at, Kane Williamson is definitely not going to open. He's going to stick to his, number three position. In terms of looking at Glenn Phillips, probably move him up the order, maybe is one option. But I think, definitely it is going to be Finn Allen and Devon Conway. Give them a run of games, at home to see how they go.
All right.
Again, going back to my point about, they start seem to be thinking, starting from this series onwards, planning towards the World Cup, whereas India have just gone. Yeah, there's a team that goes out there and plays this ODI series.
Well, there is some planning, I'm sure, which will make itself known, because I would like to think Dravid and the people in charge have a slightly bigger plan. And as I was saying, maybe, some people know they're keeping the bench warm, or they're keeping the seats that they're occupying currently warm. And the next one was the discussion point about Bolt. I think not a lot of surprises, really, if you think, right? He has refused a contract, central contract with New Zealand. And I think pretty much he has made his intentions clear. He wants to play the next World Cup, he says. But he wants to sort of complete his playing days in the franchisee cricket-like tournaments. So maybe he's going to be part of Mumbai Indians tournaments across, or Mumbai, or Star Mumbai team that plays across different leagues. Maybe he wants to finish his career there. But do you think this New Zealand team will really miss him? That's the more important question for me.
Yeah, I think, well, definitely. I mean, the, you know, there's this, people talk about kind of the broad Anderson combination, Wasim Bakar combination. I think Southee and Bolt, you know, in terms of as a combination, they have been very, very underrated. They've performed so much well together, and, you know, New Zealand have not, you know, haven't won trophies in terms of that, but they've been an absolutely integral part of it. And, you know, yes, we know, like, you know, sort of both of them are sort of over, they're not necessarily over the hill, but, you know, kind of at the top of the curve, kind of coming down. And I would have thought, like, you know, up until the World Cup, Bolt would have been part of the plans, and, you know, definitely playing this, they will definitely, maybe they're thinking, like, you know, again, try to see, like, they know what Bolt offers. It's you don't have to, like, you know, see, okay, what can Bolt do against the thing, you know, you just bring in, I think it was the last year when New Zealand toured England, Bolt literally came off from the finishing of the IPL, and he landed in New Zealand, and the first test was like, I think less than 3 or 4 days later when he landed, the IPL finished, and then the first test started, he came in and he played straight away into that. So, you know, and he performed well, and that's, they know what Bolt offers to them. You know, I look at it and think, it's not a case of similar to Guptill where, you know, he's been dropped and they said, okay, he's gone past it. I just look at it and think, like, no, yeah, maybe he just needs some rest and, you know, kind of come back, because New Zealand know what Bolt can offer them. They might want to see, like, you know, what somebody else brings to the party. If Bolt gets injured, for example, just before the World Cup, you know, they need to have a backup, somebody who they know, like, you know, whether it's your Adam Mill, again, Tim Southee is there, you know, whether it's Adam Mill, Lucky Ferguson, whoever, you know, in terms of what else can they do, Matt Henry.
Exactly.
That's probably where I look at it and think, like, you know, Bolt and Guptill are in two different places, I think, from my perspective, as far as New Zealand are concerned.
Fair enough. I think you're right. They're building Matt Henry and they've brought Adam Milne back into the picture as well. So, yeah, they're going to try out our different people at home. So, they have a little bit more, let's say, leeway there. And they're going to use that as well. And you have Blair Tickner in the T20A squad, who's sort of been filling in for Southee or Bolt whenever they have been missing. So he's continuing in the T20 squad. There is certain amount of continuity there as well, the way when you look at it. So to finish off this topic, really, for you in the T20 and ODI series, how do you see the results going?
How do I see the results going? The sort of test series are different, you know, in terms of, I always look at New Zealand and think post-it stamp size grounds, you know, sort of with the white ball tournament, it's just a lottery, you know. Surya Kumar Yadav gets stuck in, India could easily win the T20I series, no problem, you know. Equally, you could argue, like, you know, Finn Allen and Glenn Phillips get stuck in, it will go. The T20I is, like, you know, for me, up in the air sort of thing. But the ODI, I'm probably more sort of, you know, towards New Zealand, you know, Kane Williamson will shepherd them, and kind of, that's definitely, I think a 2-1 probably for the ODI. T20, I think, still at, I probably think it's a 2-1, but it could be on either side, you know, because it's, the grounds are so small in New Zealand. The likes of Surya Kumar Yadav and Rishabh Pant, Ishan Kishan get in, Shreyas Iyer, even, you know, it's just very quickly games could be over.
I'm thinking actually the other way. My instinct tells me there will be some experiments taken into the T20A games. But the ODI squad under Dhawan's captaincy looks a little bit more settled. So I'm predicting India will take the ODI series and New Zealand will take the T20A series.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see how that pans out.
Right. Well, the other discussion that I wanted to have is about, well, the retirement of a certain Kieran Pollard. Big match player. He's won a lot of games for Mumbai. In fact, his most famous innings have come for Mumbai rather than for West Indies. He's called time on his T20 franchise career. Taken you a bit of surprise? Or
no, I think when you look at his last year's IPL, I am not surprised. You know, it didn't quite go. If purely look at it from last year's kind of thing. No, he was already on. He didn't really do at all a lot in last year's IPL. I don't think he even played many games. You know, he didn't. So it's not a surprise at all for me. You know, time was coming on it, and it's a bit like reminds me of a bit like Malinga similarly from MI's perspective. You know, he played and then he got there, and then he ended up being a bowling consultant. Pollard's gone on to become a batting consultant for them. People will talk about it. I had somebody like, you know, messaging me this morning saying like, you know, not really got any technique or anything, and you know, it's just brute force. I would probably have had that kind of brute force, you know, a lot of more days than the sort of techniques he delivered for Mumbai Indians. And it's definitely been one of their greats. And, you know, even within the IPL history, I think he will definitely go down as one of the greats.
Absolutely. Now, you have that right. I think I would like to also agree that there is power. There is also a certain amount of, you know, there is a lot of finesse. I mean, you don't ever forget that this was the guy who could also, you know, sometimes play those innings where he had to hold the middle order together and then towards the end hit out. There's a lot of maturity there. I don't think he's not a one-trick pony when it comes to T20s, no doubt. And those people that are making these decisions also know enough about what he can bring to the table. And like there's a little bit of continuity. He stayed 13 years with the franchisee. You don't want to let go of that sort of experience only for somebody else in the same tournament to simply snap him up and tell him to be the consultant and sort of the power hitting that he brings. See, there is a certain amount of power that the individual possesses, but also there are techniques which people are taught for power hitting, and I'm in no doubt that this guy knows many of those secrets as well. I think he's grown up sort of, he's the finished product when it comes to that sort of hitting school, and he can get more people like him ready. So I think Surya Kumar Yadav sort of credits him with giving him those tips and getting him ready, taking to the place where he can really be that wonderful hitter and finisher that we see in Surya today. All right. Those are all the cricketing topics I had to discuss for today's episode.
Well, it's one point, you know, because you brought in like a couple of things. You talked about like, you know, the bold being sort of, you know, MI, part of MI and, you know, white ball career. I don't know if you've seen the news in terms of, you know, in England, Will Smead. Kind of gone with the sort of, you know, pure white ball contract, but he's also again, you know, similarly on the MI stables for that Emirates T20 tournament, similar as you know, Pollard as well as playing in the Emirates T20 tournament as the MI, and then you mentioned Bolt, you know, part of the MI stable. It just seems to be like, you know, people aren't noticing or slightly this thing, you know, probably another topic for another day, where, you know, the new age of franchise-owned cricketer rather than, you know, country or club-owned cricketers, you know, seems to be like, you know, slowly creeping in, where again, you know, this SA T20 is starting in January, and, you know, all of the IPL teams have got stakes there, MI have got team there, and you suddenly are seeing this, you know, there's three cricketers who belong to sort of or in the MI T20 at the Emirates, or, you know, in the IPL in South Africa, potentially at some point if things change, and, you know, in England it becomes like, you know, IPL title franchises, you'll suddenly start to see like, you know, this emerging. But maybe it's just the fact that you mentioned MI and could see all the three connections to MI, a discussion for another day.
No, but you have that right, that, you know, it might come to be that these franchisees might actually have more of a controlling interest in a player's playing career, much like football. Like, you know, playing for a Manchester United is sometimes bigger than playing for your own country. And so on. So, just to give you an example, or Barcelona, or whichever big club you might take.
I agree. I mean, strange enough, I saw a meme, you know, this afternoon, which kind of, if I can find it, you know, it was saying the World Cup winners got like, you know, 13.84 crore. The World Cup runner-ups got 7.4 crore. Rahul's IPL contract is worth 17 crores. So...
Oh, okay, there's a bit of sour grapes in there, but anyway, you might.
No, but it just kind of suddenly makes you think, like, you know, people say, why make the effort to go and win the World Cup? I just play the IPL, I get 17 crores, you know. You know, there's those arguments going around. Anyway, that's for another day, as I said.
No, of course. See, you also go play the World Cup for your country, right? And not just yourself.
Yeah.
There's more there. But okay, I understand. I understand this top point as well. All right. So thanks for this lovely discussion. And thanks for giving us your time. Would you like to maybe shout out about your latest episode of the Yellow and Blues podcast for all our listeners?
Yeah. So we just released our sort of World Cup review yesterday, the Yellow and Blue podcast. Now, obviously, we are as I've said before, a podcast that's kind of India focused, but also like Chennai Super Kings focused. Hopefully, soon we'll look at the Johannesburg Super Kings, which are kind of an extended family, in this SA T20 next year.
Aha!
Definitely do give us a listen, at Yellow and Blues. We are on Twitter as well, so just do follow us on that.
So I would like to once again highlight that, the time that we get from our co-hosts is mainly because of the shared interest that we have. So it's not just us, but we would also request our listeners to go support all the other podcast hosts and other podcasters that come and help us out by giving us their valuable time and opinions. Right? All right. Thank you very much. And I wish all our listeners a great day wherever they may be listening from. And it's a goodbye from me. And it's a goodbye from my co-host, Srini.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
This is the Armchair Cricket Podcast.